Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they
going
to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Welcome. Thursday, December 12th? What kind of madness is this? Thanks for tuning in. I feel like yesterday's show had a million things to talk about. This show, a little less as we kind of hit that pre-bowl lull. And I would never be dismissive of how awesome the Army-Navy game is. But it's more like watch it, drink it in. Its value, as cold as this sounds, is minimal if you don't have a real direct connection. My favorite t-shirts that I've never owned and have no reason to ever own are the middies that just, all it says, gray shirts, beat Army. My dad's got a gray shirt, beat Navy. He changed this audio on his voicemail. Hi, this is Sid. Just leave a message and beat Navy. So that's cool. Obviously, the enormous slice of Americana and, you know, the admiration for that you would have for, obviously, the ultimate student athletes. And I remember the first time I heard it was prior to the 1991 Gulf War. So the game was played a month before that. And I have this memory of maybe Fowler calling the game. It couldn't have been, because I don't think it was on ESPN. Just as the game was ending and wishing our people well, because they're going on the ultimate road trip after this. So yeah, the game itself is fabulous and all that surrounds it, but it doesn't have the kind of implications that you would look for through the lens of a hardcore college football fan thinking about conference championships and playoff and, you know, things like that. But either way, we've got a fun show planned. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. At the bottom of the hour, Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. I'll be joining us before he hits the airport off to Charlotte for Seahawks at Carolina. Steve Mims, registered guard, bottom of the 4 o'clock hour. At 3:45, we'll have a lightning round with Nick. And today we finalized for each Oregon women's home game, we're going to be doing our version of the pregame. We're going to be doing it live on site at Trev's over on Franklin, right across the street from the arena. And I'm really psyched. My partner is going to be Bev Smith. I mean, you've heard Bev on this show for years and years and years and years for the fantastic work she does as the executive director of Kids Sports. But, the jock in me can't wait to just be able to, you know, 9 different times leading up to Pac-12 games for this terrific women's basketball team to talk hoops with, you know, one of the ultimate hoopers. So, stoked! As far as what's going on now, somebody make Jerry Jones go away. I know that's really impossible. He's an owner and he can't get fired. Although I guess he's his GM, so technically he could fire himself. But I heard some of his excerpts on the radio. So is there another owner aside from Mark Cuban who's kind of a media regular in any of the sports?
Jerry Jones.
I said aside from Jerry Jones and Mark Cuban.
Oh, I only heard Mark Cuban.
No, I said I was listening to excerpts of Jerry Jones on the radio, and he's like, he's Gordon Gekko. It's like, how much attention, how many yachts can you water ski behind? Because it's like, you own the Cowboys. Is there anybody listening to this show right now who, if I said, who's Jerry Jones or who owns the Cowboys, you wouldn't know? It's the NFL, it's the Dallas Cowboys, but he's got to be on the radio, he's got to be the GM, and just, he has graduated. And it has nothing to do with the fact that I detest the Cowboys. On my word there. But, you know, at a certain point, attention should be warranted. And they're within the window. This is the last year, right? Because they were the 95 Super Bowl champs. So after a quarter century, if you haven't even been in the championship round, a.k.a. the Super Bowl, NBA Finals, World Series, Stanley Cup Finals, National Championship game in hoops or college football, you know, been in contention in a major in golf or tennis, it's like you shouldn't be that relevant. And we have this conversation a lot, and it plays into why the hell did the New York Knicks get so much ink? Because high profile, attention, people on a national level know that, ooh, bring up the Cowboys, click, 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 ooh, New York, click, 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 click. But, sometimes just stop. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I have not caught a lot of NHL this season. And, you know, once upon a time by now, during my East Coast days, whether I was living in Philly or New York, you know, I'd have already been to 6 or 7 games. But I was listening to SportsCenter last night. Well, I guess I was also watching it. I could do that now. I have a TV. Hey, I'm doing pretty well. We got a TV now. Although, those from another generation, like my grandfather and grandmother's generation, they used to say, yeah, we're going to listen to and mention they'd like listen to the TV, because they grew up, you know, in the 20s, 30s, when nobody had to listen to the radio. So I was watching SportsCenter last night. And, of course, if you're not familiar, Linda Cohn of the anchors is probably the biggest hockey fan. She's done a lot of Rangers pregame. She's from there. And first, she's Linda Cohn. She's awesome. And she was talking with Barry Melrose. And they were showing highlights from last night's Caps-Bruins game. And TJ Oshie, who, if you're a casual fan, and he was kind of the hero of the American hockey team, going back, is it already like 6 years ago? Something like that?
Was
he doing the shootout, Team USA?
2013, early 2014, something like that?
Yeah, it's amazing how fast it's already gone.
Yeah, it'd be January, February of 2014, because the last Winter Olympics were 2018.
Right. Well, if you catch the highlights from last night, he scored a goal. I would assume it was Tuukka Rask in goal for Boston last night. I mean, he's 3 feet in front of one of the best goalies in the NHL, and he beat him over his top left shoulder, lifted the puck, and I went, that had to be bouncing or something. He was like, nope, these guys are so silly skilled. It was unbelievable. I paused it and watched it 3 times. I'm like a 7-year-old sometimes, because it was just like, and then he had another goal on a 1-2. Carlson had a goal last night. Man, those are two good teams. Obviously, they can't face off in the Cup Finals because they're in the same conference, but that would make for a hell of an NHL East Final. a former Bruin goaltender, Tim Thomas. Man, what a sad story. So he just walked away from hockey in 2014. He was the guy in the pipes when the Bruins broke their like 40-year drought, I think, in 2011. And he talked about, I mean, he really hasn't been heard from in multiple years. And so he's getting inducted into the United States Hockey Hall of Fame. And he said that he went through a period where he didn't talk to his dad, he didn't talk to anybody, and he got to the point where I hated the game because he sustained a really bad concussion on top of whatever damage had been done, because he was a really unique story. He played minor league hockey, then Europe, then he came into the NHL as a full-timer, and he was 31 years old. And in 2011, like I said, they won their first cup since 1972, and he became the oldest ever to win the finals MVP, the Conn Smythe Trophy, when he pitched a shutout against Vancouver in Game 7. And then he took a season off. And then he came back for a year and walked away. And he says the concussion he sustained almost 6 years ago to the day, said he woke up the next morning and he couldn't make a decision. I mean, something like he couldn't, his brain wouldn't process what he wanted to eat. And he made it through the year. And he said he was maybe 95% of what he was. And he says he's recovering. But, I mean, you listen to a guy his age, who's still a relatively young man. And, you know, each day he had to spend hours to kind of reorder everything in his mind, kind of make a list of what he could achieve that day and really strictly stick to it. So he's from Michigan. He now lives in Idaho, and he's been supported by his wife, his kids, and he talked about reading a book that Ken Dryden, who I think is the greatest goalie ever to play the game, who wrote about a former player diagnosed with CTE after his death, and it kind of helped his family understand what he was going through. And he's been involved in experimental treatments. He says they've helped his brain function, including oxygen therapy. And now, this was the first time he met with reporters, and you're reading the story, and, you know, it's one of those deals. We watch the games, and then the final score is posted, and you change the channel, or you go about your daily task, and you hear something like this. It was like, jeez, it's really made you stop and think. All right, by the way, sorry for starting the show out in such a upbeat, happy note, but it was a story that I just happened to be reading within the last half hour, 45 minutes. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So still no word on if Marcus Arroyo is going to coach in the Rose Bowl, at least none that's been confirmed. We'll keep an eye out for that. As far as basketball goes, Oregon will be the men will be at the Chrysler Center in Ann Arbor. In Ann Arbor? That's a Saturday morning. That's like breakfast with the Beatles. That's, in essence, if you're... That's the Purdue game on ESPN. You know, you watch game day, and then they give you Purdue against Central Michigan at 9 o'clock.
Oh, Purdue Northwestern, and both schools have, like, the world's highest camera angles, so you look like you're watching the game from space, so you're kind of hungover from the night before. You're still trying to wrap your head around the idea, what did Lee Corso just do? Like, I know I've seen him done it before, but it just, every week, it's really strange. Did he really just do that? Oh, thank God Beth Mowins is talking to me about Northwestern and Purdue, because I really needed this. Gonna get some coffee, little breakfast sandwich, ready to go.
You know, it's as crazy as it sounds. And first of all, you know, a tad of sarcasm when you subscribe to the million different packages I do. I'm frequently able to switch away from Purdue to the other Big Ten game. Or an American Athletic, or something.
The other
on CBS
Big Ten game
Sports.
Is Ohio State Maryland, and although it's
already
it's 9:03, it's 800-0 Ohio State.
Right. So in essence, that's what we got to look forward to. But instead, this time it'll be Oregon, Michigan, in Big Ten country, but two really talented, fun basketball teams with a lot on the line because Michigan, a lot has been made, and when we talked with Austin Meek from Ann Arbor yesterday about, Juwan Howard getting the gig when their former coach, John, made a beeline for the NBA's Cavaliers, I couldn't sleep at night if I didn't take a run at that one. Its name's Beeline. It's like when you talk about financial scams. Bernie's name is Madoff. He made off. Well, I guess he didn't make off too much with their money. Whoa. He's going to die in jail.
Better puns. Work harder on these.
Are there good puns? Doesn't that make them puns?
No. There can be good puns. You can be like, oh, that's a good pun. That was good. Yeah, these are bad. Ugh. Ugh.
I'm going to debate you on this. So, anyway, that's a big game. And we'll talk with Steve Mims about, this schedule, from Memphis to the three teams they played in, the Bahamas, Nassau, Atlantis, the Caribbean? What are they, in the Pacific Southwest?
The battle for Atlantis with
Thank
the number
you.
Four.
All right. So what Nick said. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, you could feel free to text us, 321-0824. I learned something today that had been announced prior to the start of the most recent baseball season. This new relief pitcher rule, they're really going to implement that? This is like going to happen? This doesn't even make sense.
It's a very simple rule, Steve.
No, I know.
The pitcher comes in, he has to face at least three batters or end the inning. That's it.
Why?
Because baseball was slow, and one of the slow things about baseball is
pitching
changes. I know,
the lefty's in, the righty's in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the idea that the mound that you're throwing on in the outfield is different than the one actually that you have to pitch on, so you have to continue to throw, because God forbid you just do your actual warm-ups in the bullpen, walk out to the mound, and then start pitching. For some reason, the manager and the whole team has to get together to meet up on the mound to do this.
Yeah, are baseball players just lonely?
Yeah, maybe. They're playing a very slow, not exciting sport, and they're
meeting. I'm bored.
They're doing the. Oh, we can talk to each other. Oh, thank. Okay, so these people have been so mean to me in the stands. Are they yelling at you too? Because they're yelling at me a lot. Hurting my feelings.
Candlesticks are nice. We're dealing with a lot of crap out here. It's a greatest mound meeting ever.
What movie are you guys watching on the flight back?
So, in case you missed it.
Thinking a show on Netflix.
Starting pitchers and relief pitchers must pitch to either a minimum of three batters or the end of a half inning. And obviously the exception is, some kind of incapacitating injury or an illness. Would an illness apply if your righty is allowing lefties to hit like 475 off him? Skip, I don't feel too good. I don't think I could face this guy.
Got leftitis. I don't know what it is. My arm is just, it's turned
to
rubber.
Oh, my arm.
Rubberitis over here. I got to sit for a day. Just a day, though.
So the interesting thing is it's no more mix and match, which, really until La Russa and, some of the managers near the end, the latter part of the 1980s into the early 90s, who have really kind of allowed for the implementation of the one out, one batter relief pitcher. Now, a part of me really likes this, but a part of me is like, the rule is a strategy dictated outside the organization. You know, it's like when people were talking about should they ban the shift. It's like, that's not your business. Where to me, it's like if the manager wants to have the pitcher, the catcher, and seven guys all in the left center field gap, that should be his call. It's dumb because, you know, the guy just has to lay down a bunt. And unless it's Joe Torre in game six of the 2004 American League Championship Series, he probably would bunt.
Although that's the theory with the shift now is, oh, all you have to do is drop a bunt, guys. Go ahead and do it. Please don't pull the ball. And everybody's up there like, I'm going to pull the crap out of this ball just to prove them that their shift is, oh, I lined into an out by the second baseman who's standing 19 feet in the outfield again.
I've often wondered
again,
because you have people who live with baseball fans, and you know, maybe they'll watch a game occasionally and catch it, and then all of a sudden the shift is on, and like they'll see, you know, for people who've maybe been not big fans but watching games for years and years and decades, and so like when the shift really started to take root. Probably, I don't know, 12 to 15 years ago, for somebody who had kind of was like, well, what are three guys? I'm not a big baseball fan, but why is there just one player on the left side of second base? Is that legal? I guarantee you there were conversations and explanations being given around the country.
I had the second, like, winter and spring term of my freshman year in college, so 2012, we had a foreign exchange student come and live in our dorm for a year, and he was from Brazil. And we went to an Oregon baseball game, and we were out, you know, sitting in the stands, and we tried to explain baseball to him, and we didn't know where to begin. Like, there was a whole group of us that, like, we grew up playing baseball and watching baseball.
Right.
We all like
Americans.
Yeah, we all understood the concept of baseball and how it's played. And then, you know, this kid Andre from Brazil shows up, and he's like, what is this game? How does this work? And we all went, where would you like to start? And I was like, the field is a square, but they offset it. It's called the diamond. Everything's 90 feet apart, 60 feet 6 inches, and then you got the fences, but the fences can change. And I got confused. Then you get to explain what is fair and foul, what's the line,
basics,
right? And then he was completely confused because
where was he from?
Brazil.
Okay.
So, and then he was confused because PK Park is all turf, so even what's dirt is technically turf, and then the grass is different colors. He's like, how does that work? And I was like, well, if it's actually grass, it's how you mow it, so they're simulating that it's mowed grass, but it's fake grass. And I don't think I explained a single thing as to how baseball was able to work. Couldn't do it.
I had a similar experience, so you got to harken back. I'll make this quick. There were German exchange students at the U of O in maybe 1991, spring of 91. And our general manager had wanted to set up a deal with the U of O and the exchange students. So we went out to maybe Civic Stadium. No. South Eugene High. It was South Eugene High. And there's like 12 exchange students who knew nothing about baseball. So try and explain the basics. And my buddy Dave, I'm playing shallow, like between second base and where center field should be, just here, hit me a fly ball. He hits me like a pop-up that must have traveled 100 feet, and I caught it, and they all started applauding. They didn't understand that we were, you know, getting to the basics.
Baseball! Phenomenal!
He great player! That's the worst German accent ever, and it's maybe it's part Brazilian. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be back with an update on Aaron Fentress next, 95.3 The Score.
The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
They do have the actual tape. This is not a he said, he said. They're saying one thing, he's maintaining another. The Bengals are saying the Patriots did it. They're saying they didn't. The Patriots acknowledge it. The Bengals feel like they did it. And the league has the actual tape of what happened. so it's on there. So the league can look at the tape and make a qualified decision.
I don't know what's funnier, just Schefter talking about, well, they've got the evidence, or him presenting it against the Patriots to Christmas music. That's just killing me. Welcome back to Crunch Time. 95.3 The Score. Oh, man. Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Folks, we've reached that time on a Thursday when we can get our post-regular season pre-bowl view from the north. Now covering the Ducks and Seahawks for The Athletic. Was in NoCal for the Pac-12 title game last week. SoCal for Seattle's egg-laying against the Rams. Keep up on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things?
Man, I had a crazy day on Twitter. How about you?
Yeah, I've noticed. I've been mostly an observer, an occasional giggler, an occasional want to put my fist through the screener. But yeah, I see where you come from. So let's go back to the beginning. Yesterday afternoon, I tweeted, Washington fans currently trolling Oregon. It didn't make sense because the Ducks just won the North. It was historic. They won by four games. They crushed Utah, who was supposed to put them in their place. And I don't get the dog fans kind of saying, well, the Pac-12 is down. So my thought was, well, if you're such a great program, how did you go 4-5? So what do you make of some of these fans who just don't grasp reality?
Well, you know, that's what they have to do, right? They're pretty biased against their world, and they're going to be defensive. I wasn't made to how defensive people are. Like that's what trips me out. Like you're talking about their grandma or something. But no, I saw that tweet, and I thought it was kind of funny. And you know, Ducks fans sort of talking a little trash. And then you came back with something about their co-national title, right?
Right, 91 title that they're clinging to, and how 28 years ago impacted this year. I couldn't connect that dot.
That was funny. I saw that. So my dumb ass didn't have to jump in. Because I'm a Miami fan. And so I just had to talk a little trash because I, of course, have always thought Miami would beat Washington in 1991. I mean, realistically, objectively, it's a coin toss. But, you know, I talked a little trash. I found a cool Miami Pelican gif. I think it's a pelican, right? Is that their mascot?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Pelican thing? Yeah. Yeah.
It looks like a monster to me, so I never really knew what it was. No, I knew what it was. Okay. But so I tweeted something. As soon as I tweeted, I thought, oh, crap, this is going to not be good. I just knew fans were going to come at me. But you know what, though? So I basically tweeted that. I'm tired of hearing them, you know, talk about this co-national title. You know, it needs an asterisk or whatever, and it's fake. I think I called it fake.
Yeah, that went over well.
Because they didn't win it on the field, you know. That kind of nonsense. They wouldn't have won it anyway because Miami would have crushed them. For the most part, I would say the Husky fans that came out of it were actually okay. Like, they presented their case, they talked a little trash. And if they presented something good, I would respond in kind, and then they would realize I wasn't so bad. But, dude, I got told to F off.
Yep.
I got called how dumb I am. A few people were like, this isn't journalism. I'm like, no, it's not journalism, fools. It's Twitter. Like, you're holding me to the standards of American journalism because I'm commenting on a football game that didn't happen 28 years ago? Like, what are you talking about?
You know, I don't know. Of all the years now, I mean, I first met you. You joined Justin and I up on stage in 2008 at the Mo Center. We've never talked about the U. So me growing up, back east, we were pro fans, but as you might imagine, being a big fan of Namath, Reggie Jackson, Ali, I loved Miami, as brash as they were. You know, the way they talked and the way they backed it
swag.
Up.
They invented swag.
Right. So how did you become a Miami fan?
Well, I didn't like college football as a kid because I felt like every team ran the ball 80% of the time. We're talking late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
So I was annoyed with it. I liked the NFL better. Even though back then, the NFL, not very many teams threw more than 50-55% of that. Other than, I guess, Marino. Marino right. Not getting 3 or 4 or something going off. But Miami seemed to throw more than other people with Kelly and then Kozar. And actually the game that sort of tipped me over to where I really, I mean, I was already a fan of them just because of their style, but what made me a bigger fan was the Flutie game, which is weird since they lost that game, but sure, that was like an awesome football game. That was just back and forth. It was just like both teams were airing it out, and they lost, and I was just like hooked on them because it was just such an exciting game. And then, of course, I just kept following them, you know, ever since. And I'll never forget the Texas Cotton Bowl when they had like 200 yards of penalties. When Randall Thrill Hill would catch a 5-yard pass and jump up. Did he invent the whole first down thing?
Oh, maybe.
Because don't you remember he would catch a quick hitch for 6 yards and get up and act like he just scored a 99-yard touchdown. just act a fool. And it was just, they were just fun. Jimmy Johnson, oh, it was just, those are good times. But I tell you, man, when they didn't have those two teams play that year, Miami and Washington, I was so bitter. And it still bothers me today. And I think that's part of the reason why I brought that up. Because I'm still mad that college football let that happen. And then Nebraska, Penn State didn't happen.
Yep.
Georgia Tech, Colorado. I mean, there's so many different games we didn't get to see because a bunch of fools were in charge.
Well, I am still pissed over the January 87 game where they lost to Penn State, and they kicked the Nittany Lions' ass sideways, but Testaverde threw 5 interceptions. They gave up like 90 yards the whole game and lost. And, you know, for people who are listening, they're like, wow, you guys were pretty big Miami fans.
Like, they're like, did I tune into the wrong station? Is this a Cole Gables FM 98 Cole Gables or something? No, I remember that game, and then, of course, you know, the whole Ohio State game, the phantom pass interference call in the end zone that robbed Miami of the national title. Ugh.
Yeah, the Luckeyes.
Now let's really piss off your listeners. 2001 Hurricanes would have killed Joey Harrington the Ducks.
Hey, that's Aaron Fentress. I'm going to give your address out, and your. I am not party to this madness. Well, if I was in Portland, maybe, but Eugene, you're hitting a little too close to home.
My bad.
All right. So let's get to this. Because of games like that, the BCS finally came around.
Right.
But for 25 years, being a crazy history of the game buff, I went through, I mean, I used to go back through starting around 1973, 74, when TV really took over, and there was never more than 3 unbeatens in any season. So I was like, well, to me, perfection would be 4. Because I always felt if you play in a power conference and win all your games, you should play for the national title. And even when the BCS came around, only one time in 2004 when Auburn was the 3rd, but they got left out. I was like, for everybody else who says they got screwed, I only make a case for Auburn. You texted me and said, let's bring up your crazy theory of 4. So I'm guessing you disagree.
So you didn't think in 01 that Oregon got screwed?
Well, they did, but it was their fault for losing at home to Stanford. If they were unbeaten, they're in.
Oh, your whole thing was, unless you were unbeaten, you screwed yourself.
Yes.
Basically. Gotcha. I hear you. I've brought up many times I think they should go beyond 4. Now, when they went to 4, I was happy, and I am happier than I was before. I just don't like talking about who's going to win. I want them to play. Sports is not about talking without a clear resolution. You can talk, but then play. And we're just, you know, we're not being given all the games we should be able to view because it's only 4, and you have a conference champion that's left out, which I think is unfair. So I think definitely go to 8. I think I would actually even sell for 6. You could do a wild card like system with the NFL does, but I don't think 4 is enough because we still every year I think have one team that has a legitimate case to be in it that gets squeezed. And to me, if you win 11 games, how do you not get an opportunity?
Well, you're seeing it.
I think it's unfair. Like Oregon, you know, Oregon's 11-2. Why are they not? You know, why are they not in it? Why are they penalized for scheduling Auburn? I mean, that's literally what the system is telling us. They should have scheduled Auburn, or they should have beat Auburn, or scheduled someone else. They'd be 12-1 right now, and maybe they would be in it. And to me, if you go to 8, you solved that for good, and now we're golden. But you think eight is just too many, period?
Yeah, because to me, and it's maybe because I grew up a pro fan, and to you know, you could lose seven games like the Giants did and win the Super Bowl. You know, the Blazers didn't even win 50 games and won the NBA championship. I can go on to, you know, the Giants lost 75 games and won the World Series. To me, that's always what's made, kind of got me hooked on college football. I was like, so wait a minute. You could lose a game September 8th. And it could kill you. The regular season means that much. I guess I like the unique nature, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear you on that, but you don't mind seeing teams get squeezed out?
Kind of not. I like the once I like the once you lose, it's on you.
All right. Fair enough. You're
and by the way, if being a betting man, I have a feeling you're going to get your way sooner than I would have been willing to admit even a year ago. I think there's a pretty strong movement to, all right, most people agree with you.
Yes, it's going to happen eventually. It needs to happen. I think it'll be fun. It'll just give more teams the opportunity. And you, like, okay, here's an argument, though. You say the regular season means so much because if you lose once. But if you lose once, the rest of your regular season becomes obsolete. Therefore, it doesn't mean as much. It means more. Like there's a perfect middle ground in there. It's not quite NFL. We can go 9-7 and get in. But I think 11-2 should get you into the mix.
You know what, though? I got somebody to make me confess. They were like, but let's face it. Once it goes to 8, once we have these awesome matchups, you'll be all in. And I was like, yeah, I'll be all in. Who's kidding?
You'll be there for the party. You're just not sure that many people need to be invited.
Right. Good one. I'm going to get a T-shirt made. all right, so the other debate this week, I guess, had to do with the all-Pac-12 team and the coaches get to vote for it and, you know, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. There's nobody that won't take the Pac-12 trophy and a Rose Bowl over having a guy make second team all-conference. So is it the question of, okay, if Oregon was loaded with all first and second teamers, then maybe you make a case for Whittingham or Smith. But if they don't have that many, shouldn't Cristobal be coach of the year? Where do you fall with all this?
Oh, man. So the thing about these types of things is that everyone has a different viewpoint of how it should go, and that's why you vote. That's the whole point of democracy. You get everyone's viewpoint, you throw them into a pot, you come up with a consensus. So everyone has their own idea of how things should work. Some people, we can't even decide if the conference title game should matter. Should those stats matter? Should who won that game matter? I think that all conference awards are about the regular season. They're not about the postseason. How can they be? Because not everyone gets to participate in the postseason. How do we use the stats from the Pac-12 title game for the players in that game to make them all league when other players didn't have a chance to play in an extra game? Like, that to me doesn't make any sense. Whereas some people say, well, if you're good enough to get to that game, you should benefit from that. But again, to me, the winner of that game benefits from having the championship trophy. Like Cristobal won the championship game. Regardless of who he played, he won it. That's his reward. That doesn't mean he should then get Coach of the Year if Coach of the Year should be about the regular season, which I think it should be. Now, that said, even if you don't include the Pac-12 title game, I think Coach of the Year is a coin toss between the two, and I think it really just comes down to who decides based on what they watched on film as a coach that maybe they thought a team was slightly better coached than the other. I don't know. That's a coin toss. If you do include that game, then obviously Cristobal should get it. However, I don't buy the conspiracy theory necessarily. John Wilner sort of threw that out there. People were saying that, you know, everyone in the conference hates the Ducks, hates Cristobal as well as recruiting, blah, blah, blah. So I sort of did a big article today about that. And in my section on the Cristobal question, I went back and looked. So last year, Washington won the conference, right?
Yep.
But Mike Leach got Coach of the Year. Washington and Washington State, when they played in the Apple Cup, that was for the North title, correct?
Yep.
And the right to go to the conference title game. So Chris Peterson beat Leach in the North, basically the North Division title game, but Leach and won the conference championship, but Leach got Coach of the Year. That tells me that it is more of a regular season award and that a head-to-head situation doesn't matter and that there's no conspiracy against Cristobal because was there one against Peterson? Then I went back 2 years ago. David Shaw got Coach of the Year, yet he lost the conference championship game to USC. So how come Helton didn't get Coach of the Year? Right?
Yeah.
So Right. So to me, this whole conspiracy theory against Cristobal, doesn't wash. This has happened 3 years in a row now, where the conference coach of the year lost a high leverage championship type situation to another coach who could have been up for coach of the year. So I don't know what's going on there, but I don't think it was personal against Cristobal. I could go either way on it. That's that. The Kayvon Thibodeau thing, that's bizarre.
Like, you mean that he's the defensive player, the freshman of the year, but not first or second team?
But Jackson gets second team and Thibodeau gets honorable mention. Now, here's the question, though. Which way is it wrong? Is it that Thibodeau should have gotten second team or that Jackson should have gotten freshman of the year? If you look at their stats for the regular season, ignoring the conference title game, Jackson's stats are better. It's like 41 tackles to 29 tackles. Kayvon had one more sack, 6.5 to 5.5, and they both had identical tackles for loss, identical pass breakups. So the only real difference is the one sack for Kayvon and the 12 extra tackles for Jackson, who played two fewer games. So that's really a coin toss, or actually advantage Jackson. So it's like I can go either way on that one. That said, if you're the conference, you got to fix that. If you see the voting come through, you got to say, okay, we can't have the defensive player of the year as a freshman not be all conference, but another freshman be all conference. It's goofy. Okay. It just looks bad. Now, the other thing is, should there have been more players? Now, offensive line, that's so hard to quantify because there aren't really stats for that. I think Throckmorton at least should have been second team. I'm not as up in arms with that either way. Like, the AP All-League team has a ton of ducks on the line. I'm fine with that. I'm also fine if the coaches honestly believe that it was closer than people thought. Whatever. O-line's tough to decide on. But the other positions, especially on defense, there's really, again, I could go either way. But when you look at DB, you look at Diomedo Lenoir, you look at Thomas Graham, you look at Collin, their stats were not spectacular. So some people say, well, it's not all about stats. Well, it's not all about stats. These coaches are scouting these guys ad nauseum all year long, so they're watching them play, and then you're looking for specific great individual performances. Oregon didn't have a ton. Troy Dye led the team in tackles with 67 in the regular season, and that was 20th in the conference. So if he's 20th and he's your leading tackler, that means everyone else is behind that. And then in pass breakups and passes defended, they were very low. Holland had 4 interceptions, but only 3 other pass breakups. Graham and Lenoir both had one interception, and it's just a handful of pass breakups. Well, there's guys in the league with 13 pass breakups or 3 interceptions. Like, it's just there's a discrepancy there. So while I feel like Oregon didn't maybe get enough, I don't think there was a conspiracy. I think you could make cases either way. And so I just figure it's just one of those things where it's like when you have people vote, anything can happen. And in this case, it didn't go Oregon's way.
No, I don't buy the conspiracy either. And like I said, if you delve into the stats, then you're removing the fans' heart, and usually they don't want to go down that path. So, all right, I think we've covered it all, though I'm not sure we solved anything.
Got 2 more minutes?
What?
2 more minutes? How much time we got?
Go ahead. Go whatever
you need. We haven't talked about Friday yet. I told you Oregon was going to win. I told you they were going to run all over them, didn't I?
Yeah. That's been my favorite question of the week. Did we come across anybody who had Oregon winning, running away, and dominating on both sides of the ball and physically?
Dude, the fact that, okay, it's one thing if they would have won some kind of close game, you know, Herbert went off, 20, you know, I think I had it 17-14 Utah. But the fact that they rushed for like 280 against the number one rushing defense in the country was absolutely amazing. That was just like one of the most amazing flips I think I've ever seen in terms of what you would expect and what you got. Hats off to them. You know, my whole thing at the beginning of the year was, what, no run, no ring. That was my thing all season.
Yep.
They fixed the running game this year way better than last year. Not way better, but better. They were more consistent this year than last year, and they peaked at the end against the best rushing defense in the country. That was impressive to see. We'll see if they can maintain that against Wisconsin.
No, my thing on Monday was anybody tries to play the I told you so, it's like you're barred from Twitter, email, we're not friends, and I'm never speaking to you again.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, fun stuff, man. Enjoy. You going back to Charlotte for Seahawks?
Yeah, going the first time I ever going to Charlotte this weekend. Unfortunately, Cam won't be playing. I'm kind of pissed about that. And then, and then home for the final 2 49er games in the Rose Bowl.
Awesome. Talk soon.
All right, buddy.
Take it easy. All right, we need to take a break. Are we going to need to push the lightning round, or are we going to be able to hustle it in? All right, we'll be back. Lightning round is next. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Because he wanted to be in a little quieter place. He didn't want the lights on him. He wanted to be able to slide in behind Mike Trout and behind Shohei Ohtani and just go about his business. And his business is being one of the best fielding third basemen in all of baseball and being arguably the best pure hitter in the game.
It's Jeff Passan talking about Anthony Rendon trying to kind of sneak in under the radar. Yeah, those days are over. You sign that kind of deal right now, get this kind of attention, anonymity, done! All right, we ran a tad tardy with Mr. Fentress. That's okay. It's Thursday. It's the end of crunch time. Let's do this!
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
All right, Thursday lightning round. Did you hear Gerrit Cole is coming to town? These Twitter debates keep going round and round. Some vodka, please. The lightning round.
Ah, that's pretty good. Except Cole isn't coming here. He's going to your
My
town, which isn't this town.
My Anyways, town, baby.
The MLB hot stove is hot. Last year was pretty cold relatively until, like, the spring. This year we have action with like $1 billion being given away, and 800 millions of them went to Scott Boras clients. Steven Strasburg, 245. Gerrit Cole, 324. Anthony Rendon last night, 245. Play baseball, kids. Rendon was a near MVP last year, had a really great season, and now he's joining Mike Trout with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in Orange County. Joe Maddon, who is the new manager of the Orange County Angels of Long Beach, made a big splash to this offense, but it's never been the problem. They need pitching. ERA, strikeouts, walks, ERA plus, FIP, all well below league average. I mean, yeah, you're getting a full season of Shohei Ohtani to help, but and Rendon's a big upgrade on offense, but was it needed? The Angels signing Rendon is blank.
Huge! I mean, this is the best non-pitcher on the board that signed with the Angels. Now, what it'll mean? Kind of like when the Angels signed Albert Pujols, really hasn't meant that much. But that is huge hot stove news.
The Dodgers were one of the other 29 teams that lost out on Gerrit Cole, and like most teams, they were ready to pivot to their backup plan. The Angels signed Rendon, that was their thing, but the Dodgers did something evil and vile just minutes after Cole to the Yankees was announced. Ken Rosenthal was reporting that the Dodgers are interested in signing Madison Bumgarner. Excuse me while I barf. It might be one of like three things Giants and Dodgers fans can agree on, and it would not be fun. Giants fans would hate to see him go, especially to LA. I don't think any Dodger fan would actually ever accept him or want him on their team. Now, he hasn't signed yet, so I think this is some A-plus trolling, but that said, something could change very rapidly. The Dodgers saying that they're interested in signing Madison Bumgarner is blank.
Annoying to Nick.
Yes.
That's the only thing I feel comfortable saying.
It's the worst.
That's the only thing I'm sure of. I'm okay with it.
I think I said three things that Giants and Dodgers fans would agree on. I thought the other one would be that they like baseball. And then I couldn't actually come up with a third thing. Last one, very quickly. It's a little weird at this point in the year that we're talking, caring about what Vic Fangio says because, you know, the Broncos are 8-8 or whatever. But we're dangerously close to another sub-500 team from making the playoffs. And Vic Fangio has an idea: eliminate divisions altogether in football. I get wanting division winners to have a home game and rewarding that is cool, but someone has to win the NFC least. But San Francisco or Seattle going to have to go on the road in the playoffs? To go full Tannenism. What the hell, Brian? Fangio, divisionless football, everybody plays everybody, and then the best six go. Is it the best answer? No. Is it better than giving the Cowboys a home playoff game this year? Yes. So in general, not the Fangio plan. Changing the NFL's playoff format would be blank.
Overreacting, because it's cyclical. Some years you get three teams that are just loaded from a division. Other times it's like, why do we need a team from that division? Most years it actually makes sense. Don't overreact. And we're not going to. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Sports Talk next, 95.3 The Score.
But man, y'all got a coconut up.